Welcome to Indy Radio Garden. This week's highlights from community radio in the Philadelphia region.
This program brings ordinary citizens to the air to discuss issues related to health, race, safety, workers' rights, and the will to survive in pandemic times.
Our first clip comes from 92.9 FM WGGTLP G-Town Radio. They're sharing a piece from their show, The Northwest Check-In. The host, Tom Cassetta, interviews Margaret Robertson and David Harrington from the Participatory Defense Hub about providing high-quality, client-centered legal representation, courtroom advocacy, and a connection to social services. I had a chance to preview this clip, and I thought it was really wonderful, and I think you'll enjoy it a lot. It's coming up next.
And we're here with Margaret Robertson and David Harrington. They're going to be talking about the participatory defense hubs here in Philadelphia. Margaret is with the Germantown hub and David is with the youth hub. Thank you so much for joining me this morning. If you could just kind of let our listeners know what exactly is a participatory defense hub.
Well, yeah. David's hub is older than mine, so he can talk.
Yeah, so basically the participatory defense hub is basically, it started in San Jose, California by a group called Silicon Valley Debug, and they expanded all over in different cities throughout the world, and it expanded over here in the city of Philadelphia, and it's also a lot of numerous other hubs, but ours is the youth hub. And what makes it kind of like unique is that it's youth-based focus. And a lot of other hubs is not like youth-focused, but we wouldn't mind if an older person was to come into our hub and need support, we still will support them. And basically the purpose of the hub is to teach the core steps and processes of a young person case. Because when you get locked up, a lot of people don't know what's going on with the case. The family don't be knowing what's going on with the case. So that's when basically we step in and we give them that support and teach them the core steps and processes of the case. We do court support for the young person. We pack the courtrooms for them. We try to help that young person with anything they need. They need help getting back into school. We help with that. They need help getting the job. We help with that. Resumes, we help with that. Any type of support. Therapy, anything they need, we help support them with that. We create things called a social bio video and packet, because when you get locked up, all the judge and DA know is them charges, but they don't know who you truly is as a person within your community. So the point of social bio video is to paint a different picture of who you truly is within your community.
So does this, when someone's locked up, or does this the participatory defense hub start in the trial process?
It start in the very beginning when somebody either get locked up or if they home and they find a case. It starts right in the very beginning, like through processing, like through the whole step, waiting trial, everything like that.
If you could, one of you, Margaret, if one of you could kind of walk me through what someone who would approach you, does the family approach you? Do you find the case? How does one get involved who's in the system, and how do you walk them through an example that'd be like?
I guess it depends on how. If the defendant contacts us, then we work with them. And if the defendant is locked up, we'll work with the family member. Since nobody knows about participatory defense, usually you don't hear about it until after you're involved in the system. Ideally, you would know if the person's locked up to call the bail hearing and say something wonderful about them so that there is something to balance the criminal charges. But most people don't do that. So the first step would be to find out you have you are assigned an attorney, the defender, if you're low income, or you might be assigned, if you have two people, one might be assigned a defender and the other would be assigned a court appointed counsel. if you are fortunate to find out about the participatory defense hubs from the court-appointed counsel, that's fairly rare. Not a lot of them know about us. The defenders absolutely know about us. You would come to the hub. We meet 4 nights a week. And you can find a hub somewhere in the city. We have 8 hubs. 7 are functioning right now. And you would come by Zoom lately. Some hubs only meet in person, but you would find some hub that is convenient for you. The list is with the Defenders Association. So you could start out with them going on their website and finding out where are the hubs. Once you come to a meeting, the first step would be to interview you. It's not in public because these are criminal charges and it's important to preserve your privacy. We would find out what your charges are, find out who your representation is, your first court date, who the judge is, and that's when we start helping you to prepare for it. We would ask you, who are the witnesses? If you know them, maybe there's some video testimony. We want to make sure that you told your attorney so your attorney can preserve it before it's taped over or something like that. We want you to find out how to contact the witnesses and give that information for your attorney. One of the most important things we do is to help you work with your attorney. And then we follow you through the process.
Do you find, obviously, this seems like a very useful thing for someone who's going through the criminal system. And the fact that it's not that well known, why is it not so well known? And how do we change that? It seems like something that you would want to know about if you were going through this process.
That's what we're trying to do right now. Our hub started in the summer of 19. And then COVID hit just about the time we're starting to understand what we're doing and getting geared up. So we started going on Zoom. And Zoom is not something you naturally know how to operate. So it took us a while to get that down. And then there were a lot of fears about getting the disease. So I think at this point, we have a pretty good idea of how to avoid unsafe conditions. And we've done it long enough to understand the best way to go about it. And right now it's a really strange time because the courts are not wide open. They are really concentrating on people who are locked up. And you might just be waiting forever for your case to go forward. So we urge you to stay on top of that, stay in contact with your attorney. Even if you don't have a defender, you can find out what's going on in the courts on the defender website. And there's a lot of handholding right now because a lot of people's lives are just on hold.
So you guys, what you do with the hub is you really are a support function for those going through the system and assisting.
Yes.
Yeah. And just, I know you kind of talked about some of the things you do, David, bringing people, that there are people in the court working with witnesses, preparing a video. What prompted the need for this? I mean, there's sort of an obvious answer that there's not enough resources there, but specifically for each of you, Margaret and David, and you may know about the founders, what led to this being something that was created?
I feel like what led to this is that a lot of young people are going to court and they're not knowing what's going on with their case. They're not getting the proper assistance from the attorneys. They're not getting the proper rights within the courtroom. And there's a lot of things that I feel like within cases where you don't see the lawyer fighting hard enough. And that's when I feel like that's when we step in as a community. And we bring that support to show that this young person has support and show that this young person is able to elevate. If you was to give him a chance, he or she a chance to, walk out of here and be able to do what they need to do. Because I feel like a lot of young people that's in the system don't really sometimes have the support that they need or sometimes have that support from their attorney.
So, you know, what would someone do if they wanted to get involved with you? Let's say.
So if they wanted to get involved with us, like in normal circumstances, we would be in the courtroom. We would have our brochures. We'll hand out our brochures. But what now folks can do is basically go onto our website, look at ways on how you can get in contact with us. Our contact information is on there, and contact us, and we'll definitely reach back out to you guys, email, call, text, or anything, and we'll talk about the whole process of the participatory defense and how you can get involved.
And if I wanted to assist, and I'm assuming you guys are volunteers who help out, what say someone in the community wants to assist in being part of the participatory defense?
Yeah, we wouldn't mind them coming to help support with ideas and anything like that. Anything's tough when a young person's life is at stake.
So just kind of a quick, you know, there was a number of you mentioned there were 7 active hubs right here in the city of Philadelphia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how would one find out that information of getting involved with it? Is there a specific website you go to?
Well, that's where I said you could go to the Defenders Association. There's some hubs that were in existence before the Defenders. Mothers in Charge is one. And the Youth Art and Self-Empowerment Project, which is now the Youth Hub, they sponsor the Youth Hub. So they were already in existence before the participatory defense movement. And they were some of the earliest places that started hubs. In fact, Mothers in Charge was first. I think the Youth Hub might have been maybe third or fourth, I'm not sure. But we were the fifth one.
Okay. Do you have any?
Oh, sorry. No, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, is there anything as we wrap it up for getting people involved in this that you need them to know
about? Well, for us, we went through a training with the Defenders Association, just telling you how the criminal justice system functions and the places where you can intervene or where someone can intervene to get the best outcome. And one of the places is bringing people to court with you, because when judges see people who are in court, hopefully people who vote, because we elect our judges, it can really make a difference. I mean, we have seen things that we didn't expect to happen, really good outcomes, because judges see community support and because we also present that social bio information, so that these are the people who are willing to write letters for you or appear on a video for you. And you're just not there by yourself. It makes a huge difference to families also, because you don't want to talk about a lot of things that might have some stigma attached, which you can talk in the hubs. They're very supportive.
And I guess the final question, wrapping it up, is for both you, Margaret and David, specifically here in Germantown, is there a direct number or way someone could get involved, and how would someone get involved with the youth?
Okay, well, the number for the Germantown Hub is 267-277-3117.
And for the youth?
And for the youth, I could give you a co-director phone number. Definitely could get in contact with her. Her name is Sarah Morris. You can, the number is 215-219-5852.
All right. Well, I thank you so much for sharing this information. I mean, I personally had never heard of the Participatory Defense Hub. You know, Margaret, you reached out to me. I did some reading on it, and it was one of those things like, why don't I know about this? So I'm really glad that we can share this information with our listeners here.
The second clip on this week's Indie Radio Garden comes from WHGELP 95.3, the Afro-American Historical Society of Delaware. Harmon Carey, founder of their radio station, introduces the new community outreach work from WHGE, the East Side Pride Social Program, which looks to create a sense of pride and identity for the city's largest black neighborhood with its own history and local development projects.
We need to be capable to save the white people so they can realize they are no base, any scientific, rational, ethic, decent base to have racial discrimination in this country, in any part of the world, because all the human beings are the same, no matter what are the color of your skin. And having privilege and enjoying and use that privilege to grow economically, culturally, socially, is not only unfair, it's unethical, and it's also a disgrace for a human being.
Absolutely. And I think we have to be as vigilant in fighting for and standing up for our rights as our opponents are vigilant in standing up for what they think are their rights, which in effect is standing up for their white privilege. We've got to fight it every step of the way. And one of the things our radio station is doing, Pavel, is we're in the process now of trying to have a launch of this program that we're calling East Side Pride. And one platform is that we're forming a neighborhood planning council to counteract the planning that's being done by the white-controlled mayoral administration in Wilmington, so that we are involved in a significant way in planning for our own community, because the planning that's undergoing now that has been supported by the current administration of Mayor Mike Brzezicki doesn't take into account what our wishes are. The attitude, and it's another example of white privilege. They assume that they know what is best for us. So we don't have to ask you what you want because we know what's best for you. Well, they don't know what's best for us. And through one platform that we're going to bring to the fore is our own planning council. And we will let you know how we want to address some of these problems.
You know, one of the most important advances of the humanity in the legal system all over the world is the right to have the people and the communities to previous and proper consent about their own development.
Yes. That's
and
exactly
the United what I'm the United Nations has so many mechanisms to guarantee that. And it's pretty curious about how the U.S. doesn't sign, after almost 70 years, that commitment to make it law in the U.S., to make enforce public and proper consent of the communities to ask them what they want on their own behalf to develop. And that's regrettable because one of the most important struggles of the original people in all over the world is for having the respect of their own right to be consulted, to be asked, what do you want for your community? It's so elemental.
It seems that way, but it seems to be so hard in certain localities like Wilmington, because again, there's an assumption what we're doing is the best thing. And of course you would go along with this. Well, it's not necessarily so. And you won't know unless you present the question to people. Yeah. And then you will know. And we're going to go ahead and form this organization. We're calling it the East Side Neighborhood Planning Council. And we're going to do some community planning of our own.
And that's the way the projects of the community get these victories, because the governments, all the governments, has learned from colonialism, and colonialism imposes and doesn't ask. And they know what do you want because they know what is the best for you.
Yeah,
and that's a lie.
It's just supreme arrogance on the part of certain white people. My wife and I have visited a number of countries. We've visited Africa, we've gone to Australia and New Zealand. And when we go to these places, we find over and over again where white people have settled, come and really just taken over. What they've done to the Native Americans here is atrocious. They just and they make treaties, for example, you know, giving certain land and certain privileges that they, you know, and don't keep it. It's sort of like even when they say, well, this is your land, then when they decide they want to take it back, they take it back. And how do they take it back? By force.
Yeah.
I was looking at a documentary a couple of days ago about the General Custer. The whites retaliated with a massacre of their own against because of what the Indians did. And the Indians weren't doing anything but protecting their own. This is their land. It's not the white people's land, but white privilege told them that they had the right to go in there and kill off the Indians, force them in onto these so-called reservations. History of this kind of imperialism by whites.
And one thing regrettable, and it's a shame, it's a really shameful for the system, for the country, and for the rights of the people. It's in the public schools, the people doesn't know about these massacres. In the public system of education, the people doesn't know about the ancient knowledge, the heritage of the indigenous people, of the Native American people. What are the people who live in your county before the pilgrims came? What kind of nations, indigenous nations, live there? What are their culture, their customs, their ways to live, their ways to produce their food, their ways to having laws even? We don't know that because we don't respect that. We don't have a sense of that.
You know, it is the greatest absurdity to me that white people will say that they discovered America when for thousands of years, indigenous people had lived here. How would we feel? How would they feel if from some faraway planted, some earth, aliens came and said they discovered the United States? How would we feel? We'd say it was ridiculous. What the hell do you mean? We're here. But they didn't take that attitude with the Native.
And that's the same thing with the Black people. We discovered the African continent, and then we discovered that people are not people, are workers, and we can use them.
Yes.
That because their skin is different. And so, yeah, we can provide them with some rights, but they are not equal than us. Yes. Like, don't think you are on the same scale of human rights.
Absolutely not. You know, I'll tell you.
Mr. Harmon Carey, founder of the Afro-American Historical Society Radio in Delaware. Thank you. Thank you very much.
The third clip comes from WJYN LP 98.5 Uptown Entertainment and Development from the Talk to Reeves show. The host, E. Marie Lambert, interviews Philadelphia's jazz musician Brett Jolly about his experience at work during the pandemic.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have Mr. Brett Jolly.
The pandemic has slowed a lot of people down. When it comes back, get yourself right. We want to be back even better than before, if that's possible. There are a lot of them. Just to let people know, of course, Teddy Pendergrass, Elvis Blue Notes, Eric Benet, Angela Bofill, Aretha Franklin, Janet Jackson, The Whispers, Casey and the Sunshine Band, Olivia Newton-John, Gerald Levert. Oh, man, there's so many of them. I mean, all the Philly people, the Delphonics, the Stylistics. I mean, I can't even remember them all. For most of my life, you know, I've had all kinds of people come up with all kinds of different propositions. And, you know, and my thing is that, you know, no matter what, you know, you stay true to yourself. You know, love yourself. And don't let yourself get compromised and put in a position that you can't get out of.
Right.
You know?
So how has the pandemic affected or changed your performance path?
Well, I can tell you that easily. There are not a lot of gigs anymore because of the pandemic. I mean, it's starting to come back now. I had two gigs this past weekend. But, you know, what it did for me was it put me in a position to write music in the studio, work with different artists. I'm working with a lady by the name of Tony Trower from Delaware. and some other artists as well. You know, and the thing is, like, I'm just basically, you know, working in that. You know, this is what I would have wouldn't have time to do if I was doing my regular thing, but I got the time to do it now, and I want to make the most of it.
So what advice would you give an up-and-coming artist, a new artist? What would you say to them?
Good question. I would tell them emphatically, you know, when the times change, don't get caught without a way to adapt to changing times. You know, the thing about it is, you know, like right now, this coronavirus is out now. You could just sit around doing nothing, but that's not going to help you. At some point when this thing is over, you have to be able to go on and make, and that's where I am. You know, I'm entitled by any means.
Be able to transition and to adjust and pivot, because if not, you would be stuck. You would be stuck.
Yeah, you'll be a victim of your own industry if you don't find ways to adapt. You know, like, say, for instance, like think about it, right? Back in the day, you know, a lot of artists didn't have the computers and stuff to make music. You know, people like, I mean, all the people who were Tom Bell, you know, stuff like that, they didn't have all of that. But, you know, but we do. Right. So the thing about it is you have to adapt to be able to use a computer or whatever it is to be able to make stuff happen. And once you do, you know, make it work.
What do you teach as well?
Absolutely, yes. Yes, I do. Anybody who wants to learn, you know, I go for the concept of perfect pitch. I do not read music at all, but I play everything, and I mean everything. My motto is, if I know the song, I will play it. If I don't know the song, I will play it.
What did you discover? What else did you discover during the COVID shutdown? Is there anything else that you discovered about yourself, just in general, about the industry?
Yeah, about myself, I discovered that, you know, sometimes, you know, people rely on their circumstances to dictate who they are. Uh-huh. You know, I realized that, you know, I don't have to wait for somebody else or something else to determine who I am or how good I am. You know, I don't have a cocky attitude. I'm not like that. You know, usually I don't say how good I am, but you know, if somebody else says it, I appreciate it. You know, but that's the way you have to be. It's kind of like, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't be held back unless you allow yourself to be held back. The word can't is a very limiting word. When you say the word can't, you're actually setting your own limitations. You can do whatever you want to do, just do it. And that's the vibe on that. Great people are only ordinary people who attempt to do great things. My father was friends with Martin Luther King, Jesse Jackson. He also got pictures with like five presidents, including Hillary Clinton. You know, he did a lot of things. But the one thing that he told me is that, you know, you can determine your own greatness. If you're satisfied with where you are, that's exactly where you're going to stay. So my thing is, like, you know, there's goodness in everybody. And I mean this sincerely. I would love to hear from anybody who feels that they have talent. My email address is brettjolly@AOL.com. That's BRETTJOLLY at AOL. And don't laugh at me because I got AOL. I got AOL. So, all right. So, but yes, brettjolly@AOL. Let me know what you do, because believe it or not, you know, I could probably work with you online, depending on what it is that you do. You know, but you know, understand it's a new age. It's a new era. There are new ways to get stuff done. And if you don't explore them, you'll never know.
My name is Matthew Pierce from WPEB 88.1 FM, Scribe Video Center's radio station. Thank you for joining us. Indie Radio Garden is a Prometheus Radio Project production.